Hey there, it's Jeff Salzenstein, the February edition of the Tennis Evolution Plus VIP coaching call. This is the call where members of our tribe, of our family, can get on with me, send in their videos, ask their questions, and really, if they want, summarize their month. Like, look at their month and say, okay, this is what I did well, this is what I didn't get well, this is not what I did well. Next month, I want to work on this. Right off the bat, I see a question dropped in there from Nicholas, and I'm going to answer it at the top here. We've got another person coming in. This might be Jerome or Merle. I'm not sure, but it's a 512 number. So welcome to the call. Again, as I was reiterating before, questions are welcome. Concepts. The whole idea is for you all to get better next month, to learn more and to apply more. And where I want to start tonight is, you know, when I was 14 years old, one of my coaches said, man, you ask more questions than anybody I've ever coached. My father was my first coach. He taught me to be inquisitive. And so I think that's the curious mind has allowed me to create all this content, has allowed me to look at easier and faster ways to help people get better. So stay curious, keep asking questions. The better your questions, the better the answers that will develop, the higher quality people you can run into when you start really searching for answers. And I don't think it's an accident that you're here. It's not an accident you're on this call. And we're going to go deep tonight on some cool stuff. So I'm going to start with questions since Nicholas dropped it in there. And this is your time. I don't want to leave you hanging for 40 minutes before I get to questions. So let me pull a couple of them up tonight. And we'll go through them. The first question from Nicholas, any drills to learn how to judge, anticipate to a certain ball when it's coming to you? So a lot of times when I see a question, I'll ask a follow-up question. So of course I can answer it straight up, but the qualifying question I have, Nicholas, is any drills to learn how to judge? Okay, when it's coming to you. So what's happening? Are you late reacting to the ball? Are you running into the ball? Are you too close to it? Are you crammed? Are you reaching for the ball? Is it all of it? What makes you ask this question about judging and anticipation? If you can give me more specifics, that might help me with my answer. I'm going to wait on that answer to see if anything comes through. I'm going to ask another question that's come up. All of the above you said. Okay, so Nicholas, I don't know if you're shy or not. You don't want to send videos in, but if you're able to send any type of match footage of yourself playing, and give me an example of what's happening, I'll be able to break down the exact thing that's happening. Right now, I'm a little bit in the dark. I am going to pull up a video here just to give you an example. So I have one client that I work with. We get on a coaching call every month, and I'm going to show you kind of the videos he sends in, and they're not high quality or anything, but I want to give you a sense in case you ever wanted to send videos in. I'm going to share my screen right now. Oh, actually, this is me. So we're going to talk about me today, but this is an example. I'm warming up with someone, and this is the type of video you could send in. Okay. So just keep in mind, you could send this in, but on that note about anticipation. So I'm going to give you two concepts. One is more of a mental concept, staying in the moment, and one is a technical concept. Most of the time players get too close to the ball. They're too crammed. And one reason is when they make their first move, they don't outstretch their arm enough on their forehand, for example. So I didn't even do a great job on that one forehand, but let's see this one here. It was a low ball. Yeah, here we go. So let's see what I do with my first move. So there, most people don't get into that first move right there. And so if your arm is bent, you're going to have a hard time finding the ball. So getting that arm out, which is tough for a lot of players, if you're like this, getting it out there can help with spacing, okay? The second part of this is when you finish the swing, look at where my racket goes. Most people do not finish like that, high and away with space. See how far away my hand and my racket are from my head? I'm not cramming myself. I'm not finishing low, and I'm not strangling myself. I'm creating space. And so that space can help you with your spacing. And if you do that, if you have a good start and a good finish to your swing, I believe it can help your anticipation. The next thing, actually, I'm going to give you three tips. That's tip number one with technique. The next is with footwork. And I'm going to show a video. Let me show a video with footwork. We'll talk about it more later, but I want to show a footwork video. So here's the run, what I call the run through forehand. So most people, when they run up to a ball like this, they're on their front foot already and they're reaching for it and lunging. But if you notice here, I'm going off the outside leg. And so notice how I moved through it. Most people, not only are they on their front foot there, but then they're stopping their momentum and reaching. But you'll notice how I dynamically move through the ball. So again, you can see my body's not tipping over. I'm not reaching. It's staying in one line because I'm moving through it. So if you're not anticipating balls well, if you're not reading balls well, there's a good chance you're not moving through the ball correctly. So I really encourage you to study the footwork patterns in my courses that teach you how to move through shots. Okay, so that's for footwork. Now, the strategy or the kind of mindset thing around anticipation and reactions is to use a concept that I learned from another coach. It's called ball player. And so when the ball is coming to you, you want to say ball. And when the ball is going away from you towards the other player, you want to say player. And the reason you do that is when you hit a ball, most of the time players are watching the ball after they hit it. So they're watching their ball. Did they hit a good shot? Did they hit a bad shot? They're judging it. And so that's going to slow your reactions and it's going to slow your ability to perceive what's happening next. So what you want to do is after you make contact with the ball, you want to train yourself to focus on the player on the other side of the net, ball player. Ball come towards you, the ball comes towards you, you're aware of the ball. The ball goes away from you, you're aware of the player because the player will give you cues. Are they moving back? Are they moving up? Are they reaching? Are they taking it here or taking it there? Is it slice? Is it topspin? Those cues you'll learn over time, but most of the time you're watching the ball as it's going away from you and you're stuck. Your feet are stuck and you're not reacting. So now you have three things to practice to help your reactions, right? Number one, you have your spacing, first move and finish. Number two, you have moving through the ball and having the right dynamic footwork. And number three, you have the ball player concept, which is not easy to do, okay? So that is that's a good starting point for us when it comes to these concepts. Okay, so Nicholas, give space hand extended, make first move. Noted, yes. So you got number two in the footwork and number three on ball player. Awesome. So let's look at another question that came up. Oh, Amirto, okay. Great. Oh, you're welcome, Nicholas. I'm helping out my 11-year-old niece change service motion from a half service motion to a more traditional service motion. She's really struggling with her toss. Which stance would be better, a platform stance or a pinpoint stance? Just to point out, she never really had a full service motion. What would you suggest would be best to easily transition from a half service motion to a full service motion? And what stance should she use? All right, so I'm going to go on my soapbox here. This is a big soapbox. I want to see if I can pull up a video of a client I'm working with that's 13 years old and a high performance player. Okay, I'm going to see if I can find a video. Yep, awesome. So then I'm going to find, okay, this is great. Let's see here. Okay, awesome. So this is actually good because I can show the before and after. Okay, excellent. This is going to be fun. All right, so we have 11-year-old player, and again, feel free to send the video in sometime if you'd like, and I'll analyze it for you, because I can really see if, okay, is it really the toss or if it's something else? Okay, so this is this player last June at 12 years old. Okay, she's 13 now. Okay, 12 years old right here. And you can see she kind of has like an abbreviated motion. She's tossing the ball. There's not a lot of leg bend. She has a pretty good turn here. Elbow's a little bit low, gets a little low there. But you see no push in the back leg. It's kind of like a mini pinpoint. No push at all. Okay, that's 12 years old. Now we've been working for 6 months, and this was her serve like a couple weeks ago. Look what I have her in, a half serve at 13 years old. High performance player. Elbows dropping a little. Okay, now she's starting to jump in the court. Okay, this is last week. Hold on. So we've basically had her in a half serve for 8 months. So my answer to the question for the 11-year-old is I would not progress her to a full serve. I know the rest of the world does it, but that's why the rest of the world doesn't know how to serve, because they have people, your players are serving in a full motion with poor technique. Why do you want to have a weak foundation? I think every tennis player should serve from a half serve position until they learn to elbow the enemy, until they learn to turn and get that elbow in the right position. It wasn't until this last trip, or maybe the trip before, that I allowed what I call the three quarters. So you see right here how she's keeping her hand down as she tosses the ball. Okay. That was three quarters. All right. And then this last week, we finally went back to full. Here's her full motion. She's in a strong platform stance. Elbow drops a little. Nice jumping. Does great there. So I'm still not going to let her go to a full motion. I'm just doing drills now where she goes three quarters in full, but back to half. Every day she's going to do half, and she'll probably do tournaments in half. So I would just stay in the half serve with the 11-year-old and get that technique rock solid. You know, get it looking. You know, get it looking something like this. You know, have it look somewhere in this ballpark right here. And just do that for a long time. Get that totally dialed in. Don't worry about the full motion just because everyone else is doing it. I keep people in a half serve as long as I can. I don't know why there's this. I think it's just because 100 years ago, people did a full serve. I think everyone should just serve half serve until they serve like very efficiently. Then they can move the racket down. This is what messes everything up. So I'd go platform stance and I'd go half serve. And let me know if you have any follow-ups on that. I'm going to dig into some more questions here. This is cool. A lot of times I don't have a lot of questions. Tonight I do. So I'm going to go in. This one is from Don. Pronation is not necessary for a powerful tennis serve, as I now show folks how the golf swing, pronation and dorsiflexion on the backswing, and supination and palmar flexion at the point of impact can be brought to the tennis serve. The golf swing is more powerful than a tennis serve. The physics is clear if only the thick-headed tennis turds will accept the fact. So it looks like Don's not giving me a question here. He's just stating his opinion. He says pronation is not necessary for a powerful tennis serve. I don't know if I agree with that, and I'll tell you why. Because, and I'll share my screen again here. Or actually, you can see me. Sorry, I don't need to share this. You know, I think there's something to be said about taking your arm and being able to rotate your shoulder. To me, that's pronation. So if I just go like this, I'm not going to get the same power as if I accelerate the racket or accelerate the arm and rotate like this. I'm rotating my shoulder here, right? And that's pronation. See where my hand is? So I think it's a very important part. Unless I'm talking about, Don's talking about something different, I think pronation is absolutely huge. If you do all the technique right, you shouldn't have to really think about it. But there are some great drills you can do for pronation. All right. So this is George. I'm a 3.5 recreational player who has the benefit a lot, who have benefited a lot from your e-courses. I've tried also similar courses from other platforms, but I have to admit that your videos have this little extra that makes a huge difference. The reason that I'm writing to you is not about me. I have a 10-year-old daughter who's playing in a pre-competition level. She has a nice forehand, an average two-handed backhand, and a lousy service. Shocker, like most people struggle with a serve. The point is that in her tennis academy, the service is not explained enough. In contrast, the level of details I'm seeing in your videos. I was thinking of ordering the Serve Fundamentals series for her so as to be able to present her the correct approach to serve. My problem is that I'm not a tennis coach. I'm a computer scientist, so I don't know if it's a good idea to get involved. Father, coach versus real coach. I think I may cause more harm than confusion to help her out. Any advice is welcome. So this is a tough one, right? Because here's a parent that cares about his daughter, wants the best for her, sees that there's a gap, that she's struggling with the serve, she's not getting the instruction. Here's what I would do in this situation. This is more of a leadership communication issue. And the leadership communication issue would be, if I were this parent and I was a computer scientist, I would go to the coach and I'd say, "Coach, tell me what the plan is for the serve. I'm just really curious because, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of progress in the serve. I know it's a tough shot, but just help me understand what the plan is here." And listen to him and see what he says, okay? Depending on his answer, that will actually give you a lot of clues on what to do next. But the next thing I would probably do is say, "Listen, I've been studying this guy, Jeff Salzenstein. He's the serve surgeon. He knows a lot about the serve. I've been studying. He really seems to know his stuff. I've benefited from his courses. Have you heard of him? What do you think of his stuff?" Now you've asked two questions. You're letting the coach be involved in the process instead of just telling him what needs to happen. And then you listen and he says, "Oh yeah, I've heard of Jeff. He's a great guy." Or, "No, he's a turd," whatever. It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter because you have to listen to what they say. But the next, if he's still receptive, is like, "Listen, I really think he knows a lot about the serve. Would you be open to studying some of his material and apply it for my daughter? Because I really think it would help." And if this coach is open-minded, he's going to do it. If he's not open-minded and doesn't do it, maybe that's your clue that you need a different coach. So my thing would be, listen, the coach should either study my material and in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, there should be a tangible change in the serve for the daughter. Her serve should get better. Or he should go to the father and say, "Listen, I actually got this. I don't need to study Jeff's stuff. I understand the serve. I know how to teach it. Or I'm studying from this other person. He knows how to teach it. Give me 30 days, 60 days, 90 days to make improvements. And if I can't make improvements, then let's get Jeff's course." That's how the dialogue would go to get this result to happen. So if you can think about your situation, whether you're a parent or you're a player and you're trying to get better, maybe you're working with a coach that doesn't see it the way you see it, or maybe they're not open yet to watching my content online, this is how you might go about it. And I think this is a nice, mature way of handling it. And it gives you the best chance of getting results. Okay, next question. Dennis, contact point on the tennis ball. What's the normal contact point, 9, 10, or even 11? At contact point, should the racket be 90 degrees, vertical position, or slightly bent forward? Thanks and more power. Okay, so I'm not sure I know exactly how to answer this. I've never been a clock person, but what I'll show you is something that is probably as close to efficient as possible. All right, so this is my serve as a righty. Okay, this is my serve as a righty here. And you'll see when I make contact, you tell me what is that on the clock. Doesn't look like 12 o'clock to me as a righty. It looks like about 12:30 maybe, or maybe 12. I don't know, but I think that's what he's talking about. I'm not sure. But if you notice the body position and the racket position, this is pretty good, right? If I were to be straight up and down, then the arm would be more straight up and down. But because I'm tilted, that makes the racket, the body look like it creates this angle with the body right here. Okay. A couple more questions. Oh, so I was asked by a player about recovery and what to drink for recovery. So I'm going to put this in the chat box for you all. I highly recommend that you look into these products. The first is electrolyte drink. It's called Vitalite. The second one is a little powder. I think it's a powder. It's called Cramps Away. It will help you reduce cramps. So if you need recovery, if you need electrolytes, if you need to have endurance, check out Vitalite and Cramps Away. That'll help a lot. Okay, this one is from Richard. He's a high school JV coach. I hope all is well. As a first-year JV coach with many first-timers, kids are struggling in two areas, spacing on the backhand and footwork timing hitting the ball. I know you love using the off-arm to extend to create space on the forehand, but what technique should you use to create space on the two-handed backhand? So the answer to that is simple. When a player swings on the two-handed backhand, usually they finish crammed and jammed. So if I were coaching a JV team, I would make sure their hands finish in front like this and stay there. They don't need to be locked out. A slight bend. So you're going to work on extension. You're going to work on spacing. You're going to work on accelerating through the contact zone and stopping the racket like this. So I call it the Robert Lansdorp finish. This is what he would do to teach extension. I absolutely love it, and I believe it's the way to go. And that's what I would do to help these JV players who are crammed on their backhands. Also on footwork, many kids get to the general spot too early, leaving their bodies stuck and static waiting for the ball. Then they don't make any small adjustment steps necessary to help with spacing. Avoid alligator arms and strike the ball with rhythm. Any YouTube videos that you produce for these areas would be greatly appreciated. So I don't know if I have a YouTube video on this. Maybe I need to create one. But, you know, getting to the spot too early, one, it means they don't understand timing and rhythm. But if you get there too early, you can actually move through your shots again, like I said earlier. A lot of people, they get to the spot early and then they just get static. So I would say if they get to the ball early, like he said, you have to teach them to use those adjustment steps and have a great finish, right? Even if they have alligator arms like this, they still could practice their finish. And if they keep practicing their finish, maybe their first move will get better. But arriving to the ball at the right time is an art, a science. You can start doing counting methods like 1, 2. So you can count one when you get to the ball. Most people, when they're learning the game, they're moving too fast. They're in a hurry. So teaching them to slow down and be smoother, that can help as well. Great question, Richard. Okay, one more question here, and then we'll get into some more content tonight. Okay. This guy, this is from Lori. I think it's a gentleman from Finland. Hi there. Thanks a lot. I love doubles tactics. By the way, we have doubles content coming later this year. Be awesome. Is there somewhere in the app plus membership for pre-training warm-up? I mean, more covering than the first week, less covering the whole programs. Do you have a real-world mobility, flexibility, recovery top 10 things? So let's get into mobility and recovery and flexibility. You definitely want to have a dynamic warm-up. You definitely want to have corrective exercises to be doing. And if you want some of the corrective exercises, you can send me an email at jeff@tennisevolution.com. I'll get you hooked up in the app. I'll send you some cool exercises. You definitely want to have these stretching, mobility, and corrective exercise routines with recovery. Cold showers, hot cold showers would be great. I use these limp boots that I put around my legs. They're like limp sleeves that go around the legs. That is awesome. To use, obviously you got to get your diet and your hydration on point. We talked about the hydration before. Foam rolling is helpful. Massage, that's big too. All those things, if you can incorporate it into your lifestyle, it can be super beneficial. Okay. The next thing I want to go into is I want to talk about a success story. So this success story, I'm really excited to talk about. Let's see if I can find the email. So this is fun. So there was a player that reached out to me, a player and a dad that reached out to me about 3 years ago, two and a half years ago. Yeah. And his name is Strong. And Strong graduated Division I college. Got to get share button on here. And this is really cool. I these stories excite me. Doesn't have a lot of money. Trying to make it on the tour. And Strong is about 490 in the world right now. And he just had the biggest win of his career. He just beat someone in the top 200 in the world. How about that, huh? Isn't that exciting? So here he is on Match Point. Strong is returning serve, and he's 490 in the world, but this guy's top 200 that he beat, Peter Polansky. So he's returning serve on the near side here. He moves left. It's got a great move, a lot like Agassi. Just rips the cover off this forehand. Guy reacts. He comes in. He's got a short ball. He loads up. And just rips the ball. How cool is that, huh? At the Ohio State University. And then watch him pump and turn around. How cool is that? So Strong came to me 2.5 years ago. He flew to Denver. His serve was terrible. He wanted to improve his serve. We spent 3 days together. We spent a couple more times together in different cities kind of randomly. And I got him some corrective exercises to work on his body, change some things in his body. And now he's serving unbelievable. There was one stat line where he hit 17 aces and zero double faults. Another one, it was like 8 aces and 1 double fault. He's just doing great things. I'll show you, this match was a live stream with Dominic Knoffer last week from Germany. Dominic Kofer, and he lost this match 6-4 in the third. So you can see he's on the far side now serving. This guy's 92 in the world, and he's just dropping bombs, you know? 92 in the world, and he lost 4 in the third. Like, he's right there. He's in this match. He's competing at the highest level. He's made a big jump, and it's so awesome to see. We haven't worked that much together. It's been a lot virtual. Saw him a couple times, like I said. He's a workhorse. He's trying to master his serve, and he just keeps getting better and better. And, yeah, I just wanted to share that story because it's coming this week. He won that match yesterday against Polansky. He plays tomorrow, and I'm really looking forward to seeing, what happens next. With that being said, let's shift over. If nobody has any more questions, let's shift over to the video of me warming up. I'm playing with one of my students. He's 16 years old. And I don't do a lot of teaching these days, but I thought, you know, let me just film this. And what I'm doing here is we're warming up with some mini tennis. And again, you can see my first move. You can see my spacing. You can see how the racket drops below the ball. And look at the exaggerated finish. So look at how high the racket goes there. Most players don't finish that high in a round like that. That's how I want players to warm up. Getting some spin on it. Even when I'm missing the net, no big deal. But it's the first move. And it's the finish. You can see most of the time I'm open stance there. I'm stepping in, but you can see I'm not stepping across. I'm in more of a neutral stance. Little shuffle step out of the way. See that little shuffle step? Not turning too much. So backhand. My backhand's a little on the stiffer side. So you can see how my racket head, my racket's not dropping below the ball there. I can loosen my wrists a little bit more there. That would be helpful. But you can see the extension. Same thing here. You can see how my racket's not really dropping. But again, there's good extension there. Keeping my head still. This one dropped a little more there. Still could relax a little more. See, even right there, you can see. This is one reason that I didn't have a better career is those hands are not dropping right there. A little on the stiff side. You can see the difference. On this forehand, look at how the racket drops. It's a lot looser. So I gotta relax my wrist. Starting to back up. You see the exaggeration again on the space, and then look at that finish right there. Look at that. Again, are you doing that when you warm up? Are you teaching that? Look at that one right there with the feet. Look at how as I hit the ball, I don't stay static. So I hit and I keep moving. See, I keep moving. That's the thing a lot of players don't do. They get set and they're locked in. You need to keep your feet more flexible. You need to be able to move as you hit the ball sometimes. This one, you can see me do the step back there. There's a buggy whip. Look at that outside hop buggy whip. So that's something that, again, if the ball comes deep and you're moving left, you can use that footwork. You don't have to step in. And then I'm going to step in there, right? So I step in on one ball, open stance on another. Balls sound like rocks, don't they? You see how the movement is pretty fluid, right? See, I moved on that one too. See how I stepped behind? Staying real loose with my hands, especially on the forehand. Let's look at that slice right there. Racket's up. Look at that finish. I hold the finish. I hold the finish. Inside the ball, I hold the finish. There's the extension. So whenever you're too close to the ball, you can move. You can move away from it as you hit the ball. You don't have to be static. Okay, if you're too far away from the ball and you're lunging, you can actually move through it. All right, so any questions so far? Don't see any more questions. Okay, I do have more content to go over, but just wanted to show you kind of what a warm-up work looks like. When I'm, you know, focusing on my space, I'm moving through shots. Those are big keys. Okay, let's move on. Again, I appreciate you all being on this call tonight. Gone through some cool stuff so far. Let's move on. Where are we going to go next? Let's break down some serving here. I'll kind of tell you what I'm working on with the serve. Okay, so as I said before, this student, see how she's bringing the racket up as she tosses the ball? That's not a great position. So you want the racket to be more delayed. I like it down by the waist or even a little lower. What happens when you get the racket up this early is then you have to wait for the ball and the elbow can drop. And that's what happens with this player. It doesn't mean if you get the racket in the right position, it still can drop, but this sets the stage for the arm having to go somewhere. Now, this position is pretty good with her turn, kind of loading up, but it's not great with how she uses her legs. So you can see that foot is not pushing off. And then she's dropping this tossing arm early. We have to work a lot on that with her. And then she's basically just spinning without using her legs. You can see how bent over, you know, to the side she is. Look at the angle. We got to get that arm up into this position here, straighter. Okay. So this is her motion. Then we went to half serve. She's a little high with the elbow here. And she's a little squatty, but again, look at the difference in the knee bend. I mean, look at the change. Knee bend, loading the back leg more, tossing arms straighter, probably a better position with the racket. She does drop the elbow, and she does fall a little bit left. She jumps a little bit left, but not much. It's a nice little progression. And then this is the most recent full motion. Again, look at that load. So we compare it to a few weeks ago. So you can see this position is a better position than this one. Okay. Better with the arm, better with the racket. Wish that elbow would stay up. She's actually not, let's see where, she's similar with her tossing arm. She's actually getting off the ground. It's pretty similar with the racket angle right there, right? Pretty similar. I think she's a little taller here, but not much. She actually pronates a little better there. But all in all, what we teach, we put this cone down because I want her to jump and land in line like that. I don't want her falling left, landing left. And I want her to land with the second step like this. So we call it the 1-2. So I want her as tall as possible at contact, and then it's 1-2 with balance. So she's got to keep working on that. Okay, let's cover one more thing. We're going to cover some technique, some footwork, actually. I want to go through some footwork. And then we will finish this up, go to the downloads. So we've got slice forehand, two-handed backhand, and one-handed backhand. Awesome. Okay. Here we go. Excellent. All right. So I want to talk about footwork because the student that I'm working with, we're working a lot on footwork and transitioning. So the first one we're going to cover is the two-handed backhand. I want to show you some variations. So coming forward. Let's take a look at the lift and land footwork pattern on your two-handed backhand. So just like the forehand side, the key is to get on that front foot before you make contact. Really push off the front foot and pull your body off the ground. A lot of players don't use a lift and land when the ball's just off the center of the court in the strike zone. You can see how this leg kicks back here and I'm hopping off of the front foot. So you can see, again, I could have better extension, but again, and also look at the lift and land off the front foot. So you can see how I'm kind of stalking the ball with the racket. I'm finding the ball. You know, this talk about the spacing. You want to see if you're in this position in your anticipation and you're reading the ball. You want to look like that as you're moving up to the ball. Then as the ball bounces, then you start to take the racket back. And when I say gallop, I'm talking about that move right there. That's pretty advanced, so you might have to shuffle, but see, I'm on my front foot, and then I bring that foot and the back foot in front, like that's the gallop, and then you lift and land. So I'm showing that because I don't see a lot of players using the lift and land two-handed backhand, even one-handed backhand. So you can hop off your front foot on your backhand approach. Now, so this is, I believe, a drive. Watch this. So this is a carioca. The ball's in the middle of the court and it's low. And you don't always have to slice this ball. So I'm showing a drive. I mean, most of the time you're going to slice this ball, but you still can hit it. There's the carioca. You can see again, I'm finding the ball without turning sideways so much. My hips are not completely sideways. I'm making a nice turn as I move forward. And then I hit and I keep moving. Yeah, if it's into your body, you want to use that carioca. Okay, so now let's go back to the slice. Let's look at the slice forehand. We talked about the run through. This is for doubles, for singles. Might sound like a broken record. So there's the crossover step right here coming out of the split. Most people do not take a big step. And then notice how this outside leg's in front. Most people get on their front foot and they reach. So you want to really train this on the forehand and backhand side. There's the big stride. Load up the outside leg. Make contact. Feel like a forehand volley. Direct it straight in front of you. Just moving through is so important for the balance and the anticipation and the reactions. And just feeling graceful on the court. So start shadow stroking this. It can make a huge difference if you start studying the footwork patterns around the court that I've got in the courses, and you get better with your movement on the court. Okay, so we're going to finish up tonight. Do you all have any questions before we leave? Anything you'd like to see for next month? Let me know. We didn't even get to the pro footage that I want to talk about, so we'll save that for next month. Always so much to talk about. So many great things happening in my life with the tennis that I can share with you, and I look forward to it every month. Please don't hesitate to reach out, ask for answers, ask me questions about what you can do to get better yourself, or if you're helping a child. Please also share Tennis Evolution with others. It means a lot to us to get the word out. We want to get millions of eyeballs on what we're doing because we believe it can help people improve faster. So with that being said, thanks so much for your time tonight, everyone. Had a great time sharing this insight, sharing what's going on over here at Tennis Evolution. And we'll see you on the call at the end of March. Thanks, guys.